I was fortunate to play at a very good basketball school. And then you go away and you coach and you think that, you know, if I ever had a chance to coach here at Maryland, it'd be great. But I never thought I'd have the opportunity to come back and coach at Maryland.
Trimble with 3 seconds. Trimble for the win! Cowabunga!
A sellout crowd of 43,000 cheers Queen Elizabeth and her consort Prince Philip. Very special guests of the University of Maryland.
90 seconds to go. Vasquez for three in the lead. 78-77 Maryland.
I believe that the Terrapin is the loveliest, perhaps the most beautiful of all trees.
There's Wells to jump out, make the depth, and slam it. Yikes. Brown will take it inside the five. Touchdown, Maryland. Terrapins beat Virginia Tech.
And no handshake for the coin toss from Maryland before the game today. It is on.
Okay, grab shell, dude.
Ha-ha! Righteous! Righteous!
And breaking free for the touchdown is Jay Sean Jones on his first touch as a Terp.
You're listening to Inside Maryland Sports Radio.
Of course. Last week, we spent an entire show talking about how we now believe that this Maryland basketball team is different, that Turgeon 2.0 is about to be unleashed on the Big Ten in college basketball, that Lucy will actually hold the football this time as Charlie runs up for the kick. And a week later, they lay a giant turd at home against Illinois and survive only on a godlike minute of basketball from Anthony Cowan. And then days later, they get punched in the mouth by Penn State on the road and lose their first game of the season to start the Big Ten campaign 1-1, leading us to wonder whether this is just going to be another repeat of the trademark Turgeon season or something actually different. So we will break this down plus all of the football recruiting news because that is why you are here. You are listening to IMS Radio, and today we have with us the publisher of InsideMarylandSports.com, Jeff Ehrman. Football and football recruiting reporter Ahmed Ghafir, and as always, I'm your very under the weather and on many drugs host, Paul Douglas. So Jeff, as usual, we can count on Maryland to make us look like fools. We spent most of last week talking about how we were pretty damn sure this team was different. And I swear to God, if you just wanted to pick two games that could have fit into literally any Mark Turgeon season since he's been here, those games at home against Illinois where they won 59-58, and losing to at Penn State 76-69 could have fit into any of them, and we wouldn't have blinked once. The turnovers, the sloppy play, out-physicaled, just bad. Just bad, and basically the reverse of everything we saw in the prior 10 games.
Yeah, is this not a little bit of a flashback to like 4 months ago on the show after the Syracuse game? Well, from last week, you know, there's like the obvious caveat that they haven't played anybody really good, but... And it feels like that. Obviously, this team is much better than the football team. They're not going to crash and burn, but it does kind of feel.
It's the
I was
pattern.
Reminded of that. Of when we talked about that during football after the 2-0 start.
Yep.
How great everything is with the minor caveat. And here we are. I mean, they played, I think, what might be the two most physical teams. It, definitely two of the most physical in the Big Ten. Not to make excuses for them, though. I mean, the Illinois game was just inexcusable. You know, how they played early in that game for that to be your Big Ten opener and to continue to just stumble right out of the gate and play so bad. I mean, I think the Marquette game might be literally the only game out of 11 that they've come out and taken any sort of comfortable lead in the first 10 or 15 minutes. No, there was one other, I guess one of those, Holy Cross maybe, or whoever it was.
Doesn't matter.
But yeah, they just keep doing that over and over. They can't shoot. Which is becoming a problem. You know, last year they started like that too, and I was saying shooting is going to be a problem all year, and I ended up being wrong because Eric Ayala turned into this shooter, and Wiggins shot well. This year, though, I don't know. Maybe they'll do it again, but the 3-point shooting's been terrible. They're not finishing around the rim, and you know the depth in the post is that. That's what I was saying all early this season was my biggest concern is you really don't have any depth or bangers down low. You got Sticks, who's really talented player, but you know, we've said it a million times, he's more of a finesse guy, and the rest of those guys are all completely unproven and or freshmen, and Penn State took advantage of that. I mean, the freshman Makai Mitchell really struggled. All the freshmen struggled there, so you know, now all of a sudden after the honeymoon is over, you know, people are starting to get antsy again, and you can't blame them with the way these first two conference games have gone.
And frankly, they have every right to. I mean, when you look at the macro stuff, I mean, you talk about three-point shooting. Now, when you look at last year's team, you know, they needed three-point shooting. Mark Turgeon teams have always needed three-pointers to go in to be a functional offense in the half court. But last year, you had Bruno Fernando. So if they weren't going in, you could at least have an outlet. This year, you've got nothing. I mean, if you don't, if you got a team that's sagging and let you shoot threes and you're not hitting them, you're not going to be able to drive to the lane. You don't have a post player. I mean, Sticks is doing his damnedest down there, but he's Sticks for a reason. Like, he's not a big guy. He's not a back-to-the-basket guy. And the Mitchell twins are, frankly, just completely worthless at this point. We talked about this last week, and one of the things that I had said was if you wanted to have a note of caution, it was that neither of the twins look like they're ready. And eventually you're going to run into some of these teams that can throw some real bangers at them. And I don't know what Maryland's going to do. And we just saw what Maryland's going to do. They're going to fold. And that's a problem. Like, that is a big problem.
Yeah, the thing about Bruno, aside from scoring, is he let Sticks be himself. You know, he anchored the middle. Sticks could kind of roam around, pick his spots, and he can't do that this year. He's rebounding great. He's a great rebounder. But he's not a scorer down there. You don't have any low post scoring really at all. He gets a couple a game, but he also gets blocked or misses a couple a game. So the lack of low post scoring is concerned. I mean, you know, they're still a really good team. Are they the fifth best team in the country? It really doesn't look like it from this two game sample. Who knows? Maybe they'll come out and win five in a row the next five. They've got the talent, obviously, to make the run. But all of a sudden, you know, there's some things being exposed really quickly.
Yeah, it worries me because, you know, it feels like in a game that are under the proper conditions, you know, this is a really good team. Like if the refs are calling fouls that are fouls, you know, they're gonna be able to win those games. Like, if they're gonna be able to play.
If Cowan's playing like a star, you know,
right?
He's got to keep playing at that level he was. He can't have that game. You know, at Penn State was a flashback to some of those games earlier in his career. If that happens, who puts the ball in the basket?
But it's a little bit of a
scorers can't shoot.
Right, it's a little bit of a chicken or the egg thing, though, isn't it? Because it seemed to me that in Penn State game, the reason he started being Bad Cowan again, as we have nicknamed him here, is because Ayala and Wiggins were completely taken out of the game. I mean, Morsell couldn't do much either. I mean, they weren't able to run. When they did run, they threw the ball out into the crowd. I mean, it was just, you could almost see like at some point late in the first half where Cowan was just like, I'm just going to have to score 25 and hope that that's enough. And, you know, it wasn't, but it makes you wonder that all these things that we've talked about, you know, new Turge, you know, the fact that they were more aggressive, they're running, they're playing zone, they're trapping a little bit, they're doing these different things that they haven't done before. The problem that I see with these two games is, like, the second they hit conference play and things aren't going well, it felt like they all fell back right into what was comfortable, which is Turge ball, slowing it down, passing around the outside and hoping for a bad shot to go in. And if that's what this team turns into, they're more talented than I think the last couple iterations of Maryland under Turgeon, but that team's not going to win shit. And that's,
well, the turnovers is the big thing. 13 in the first half. And we've seen games, you would say that's unimaginable. We've seen games that look exactly like that in recent years where they came out and literally everything they did turned into a turnover. It was crazy. You know, it was just every time, whether it was a bounce pass or a guy just dribbling it off his foot or just a, you know, that one, I think it was Morsell, tried to throw that, what should have been a pretty easy home run pass, and threw it off the backboard. I mean, there are some issues, man. It's going to be interesting to see what he's able to do in this little 8-day layoff before Seton Hall, because it kind of feels, you know, I don't want to overstate the importance and say it's a must win, but it's a good barometer at least to see what they do in that game after the past two.
Right. You know, like it's hard, you know, you try not to overreact. I mean, Louisville lost last night to Texas Tech that had no business beating them. You know, it's, to me, it's not really that they lost. Like, Penn State was a favorite in this game. I mean, yeah. Penn State, despite getting just massacred by Ohio State in Columbus the other night, like, they're actually probably pretty good. Like, that's not my problem. Right, yeah. Chambers probably for once gets in the tournament with this team.
Yeah.
But like, it's just the way that they lost, and it's like, oh my God, you just transported back to any of these other turd seasons the last few years where you see the same stuff, the turnovers, the defense that just doesn't get itself together, you know, before the lead is up to 10, you know, just the inability to run half court offense, like all those things start seeping back in, and it's like, oh God, we're just going to do the same season all over again.
Especially in the context of it being right after the Illinois game, you know, where you needed a miracle to win that one, had no business winning that game.
Right.
So, I mean, they've led their first Big Ten games, their first two of them, they've led by, I think they've led for a combined total of like a minute and 17 seconds or something like that in the first two games against two teams that are in the middle of the pack in the conference. So that's kind of scary, but you know, it's really hard. That's what makes it hard. And we've said that before, makes it hard to gauge how good they are. Cause these early season schedules, pre-conference, they don't play anybody. I mean, yeah. it wasn't a Georgetown in the John Thompson days cupcake level schedule, but it wasn't, you know, it was just kind of middling.
Well, yeah. I mean, you think that like Marquette's going to be good. You know, you feel like a Temple and a Harvard and a Notre Dame might be top 50, you know, top 100 KenPom wins, you know, but you know, nobody's good enough where you can really gauge whether they're an actual top 5, top 10 team or not.
No, you're not playing any top 25 teams, you know, you're not scheduling, and that's a pretty consistent theme, you know, so maybe it would be a good idea to get out and play, even if it's not Duke, get out and play somebody of some note, some top 20 team, and maybe your team won't be quite as shell-shocked once you get to conference play. I don't know. I'm not a coach. He knows better than I do. There's a lot of strategy that goes into it in terms of KenPom and your, you know, the tiers and all that jazz, but I think it might help you because clearly they've, you know, been a little overwhelmed physically in these first two Big Ten games.
Yeah, it just really, it feels more less about like talent and skill level than just like a physical matchup kind of thing. Like, you know, these two teams are probably the worst matchups for Maryland in the Big Ten Conference, just with the guys they throw out there. And, you know, in a way, maybe this is kind of like preparing them for like what are going to be more physical battles down the road. But, you know, it's not great. And, you know, if you separated these two losses by a month, nobody would really be that concerned. But when you put them back to back like that, it's kind of like, oh, boy. Here we go again.
Yeah, we won't really know much. Well, Seton Hall will be obviously a test. That'll be interesting. But then we'll really find out 2 weeks after that. You know, you got Indiana, Ohio State back-to-back. Then again, both those games are at home. We know anything at Xfinity kind of changes the whole picture. They kind of have a magical home court advantage there. And then after that, it's actually fairly soft. I mean, they got at Iowa, at Wisconsin lost to Rutgers, which is... I'm starting to wonder if Greg Gard's on the hot seat there. That's a terrible loss. But after that, they don't play anybody. They don't play the powerhouses forever. There's no Michigan outside of that Ohio State game. There's no Michigan or Michigan State until a lot later in the schedule. But anyways, it's just hard to gauge where they're at now. We're kind of hitting the reset button. It's not as bad as it was in football when they just completely fell apart. But it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to – nothing's a must-win at this time of the season, but they got to beat Seton Hall. If they're a good team, they beat Seton Hall. I mean, Seton Hall doesn't look as good as –
That's right. If you want to reestablish yourself as at least a legit, bona fide top 10 kind of – even top 15 team, that's a game. And they're tough. They had Michigan State. Michigan State or Seton Hall completely blew that game. I think they were up 7 on Michigan State with like 2 minutes left. And again, you know, everybody's beating Michigan State somehow this year. But I agree with you. That's one to get your mojo back and not completely fall off. That's when you really need to win.
Yeah, and I it just feels to me like like seeing that line against Penn State, like we all knew that was going to be a loss because we're Maryland fans. Like that's what happens. But like a top, you know, the number four team in the country at Penn State, where Vegas has got Maryland as an underdog. Like I just feel like everybody knows that Maryland is a fraud until proven otherwise. And if they lose Seton Hall, they're going to drop like a rock.
Yep. I mean, and the Big Ten's really tough this year. That's kind of the thing, the catch there for them is he's finally got probably his best team, but he's also got the toughest competition in the Big Ten, maybe by far. You know, I mean, the conference is top to bottom pretty tough. I feel like I say that every year, but this year it really, I mean, with Ohio State being arguably number one team in the country, Indiana starting to come to form, Michigan State, we know they'll get it together. Michigan looks great.
I think those teams are a lot better than we thought going into the season, which is part of the issue. I think looking before the season, we figured it would be pretty good, but now it looks like it's really good.
Well, the other thing is, you know, we mentioned that their struggles, I don't know if I want to say struggles, but big question marks with their post players behind sticks. Now Turgeon saying that Shoal Merriel, he's hopeful he'll come back in mid-January if things go well, which the line before was that we expect him back around Christmas time. So that's got to get you a little nervous too. I mean, not that, again, he's always been kind of that lottery ticket in your back pocket, but he would have made a heck of a difference if he can even play decent minutes for you at his size at your most troublesome spot. And now he's sounding a little more squeamish about when and if he's going to come back.
I mean, that always felt like a pile of crap to me personally, the whole back by Christmas. Like, you know, the guy's just starting to really play normal basketball again. You know, I never believed that. So like, I'm not sure.
Yeah, they just put rods in his legs like 3 months ago.
Right. Yeah. I never really believed that. So like, I never was counting on that. But then when you look at the fact that clearly the Twins are not ready, you know, it becomes a lot more of a priority now than it was, you know, a couple weeks ago. I mean, at least they look like they would at least be serviceable. And the fact that Mekhi was just terrible against Penn State and Mikel couldn't even get off the bench, you know, that pretty much tells you.
You got to give Ricky Lindo those minutes. I mean, he was a starter in the first game of the season, fell out of favor. I think that's your go-to move now is try to make him a guy. Because he has the capability to be at least a good rebounder and defender. He's not going to score a lot, but to me, he's a much better option at this point.
And he's physical. You know, he's not a big dude, but like he plays ball like that. Yeah. That can actually, you know, that level of aggression and kind of getting in there and fighting with those guys actually can make up the difference in terms of size. Like
he's more athletic than the Twins.
Absolutely. I mean, there were a couple times where Mekhi just he was in position to dunk the ball right under the hoop, and he'd go up for a soft layup and get swatted by Watkins. I mean, it was bad. And those guys need Kyle Tarp and like an off season like nobody's business.
Yeah, that's a grown man against a couple of teenagers. I mean, Watkins looks like, you know, I've made my jokes, but he looks like a Major League Baseball player from the 1980s with the stash and everything.
He looks like really Fred McGriff in the Tom and Manson commercial.
Yeah, he's got a cool 80s baseball player look going. But they're going to need some time. They're both, you know, they're both really skilled. I think they'll have good careers, but they're below the rim players who have not had a chance to develop, and they're just kind of being thrown into that role. Kind of, you know, in hindsight's 2020, because I wasn't pushing this at the time, but you wonder if maybe it would have been better to add another big man instead of one of the wings they added late last year, you know, but hindsight's 2020. He's just got to roll with what he's got.
Yeah. I mean, you never know. I mean, I clearly that both of them are really skilled players. I think it's just a matter of, you know, when you go out there and you get punched in the face, how are you going to react? And so far the reaction has not been great. All right. Well, enough about that. Maryland's off next week. They got finals and all that stuff. They play at Seton Hall on the 19th, which I believe is next Thursday. So hopefully
I got to deal with people bitching and starting the same threads and complaining about the same things for a week without a game. That's just the worst when that happens.
It's bad.
They need to get a good win before these breaks so that the tenor is not just unsufferable on the message board.
Turgeon's post-game comments were literally just throwing red meat to the dogs too. He not only brought up the 6 games in 12 days, he brought up the fact that they're a young team, and he brought up the fact that apparently they've only installed like 5 offensive plays, which
I don't know what that was strange.
My guy, like, just don't say anything. Like, just don't talk.
I think he tries. He knows, and he knows the things that kind of push people's buttons. But in the heat of the moment, after those losses, it's just, you know, it just comes out. Yep.
Yeah. All right. Well, enough about that. Believe it or not, we have some decent football news. Ahmed Ghaffir, are you still with us?
Yes, sir.
We didn't lose you to a Chipotle burrito or anything, or studying for finals.
No. You're good. Oh, yeah. Football recruiting's got my full attention right now.
Yeah, I bet it does.
And it's killing it, by the way. I think Ahmed deserves incredible props. He has been absolutely killing the football recruiting beat.
Literally, the only thing that generates more posts on the InsideMarylandSports.com message boards, other than Mark Turgeon comments after games, are Ahmed Ghaffir posts about recent commitments. There have been a lot. I tried to track them down and write them down, and I just stopped in the middle because there are too many, and there were too many people visiting and too many people doing everything. So, Ahmed, I am just going to sign off, and I'm just going to let you go. You can go ahead and start with the commits, and then maybe after that talk about kids who visited last week but might commit later, and then hopefully afterwards get into what we can expect with this next weekend, which is another giant recruiting weekend.
Yep. So Maryland has gotten 7 commitments in the last week. 4 of them are from independents. One of them is strong side defensive end Messiah Nasili-Kite, defensive tackle Ami Fanau, inside linebacker TJ Cauty, and offensive guard Jahari Branch. They added today North Carolina offensive tackle Delmar Glaze. They also added former Ole Miss running back commit Kaiwan Herndon. And leading into the visit, actually, they had a pretty good chance at landing Ridgeview safety Glenn Miller. Miller's actually a guy that could potentially grow into an outside linebacker after talking to his coach, you know, depending on his development with strength and conditioning. But, you know, the obvious takeaway here is the numbers and the depth and trenches. You got a defensive end, defensive tackle, offensive guard, offensive tackle. You know, that kind of directly correlates to what Mike Loxley and the staff we're kind of saying, you know, at the end of the season, you know, we need to increase the numbers and the competition in the trenches, and playing time is available. That's kind of been the message on the trail. And, you know, that's a big reason why Maryland was able to land a lot of commitments last weekend. Some other names to keep an eye on from last weekend is Sandalwood quarterback Jeff Sims. He actually just decommitted from Florida State today. He's a top target for Maryland. And by now, all the Maryland fans have seen on Twitter, all the Maryland coaches flying around Florida in their helicopter. It was pretty cool. They got to see a good amount of kids in the Florida region today, tomorrow, and Friday as well. And speaking of seeing some guys down in Florida, I think the staff down in Florida could actually generate another commitment as early as today on Thursday, or as late as Sunday. But Maryland's in position to get another. And then again, some names to keep an eye on are St. Thomas Moore. He's the top prep player in the country. Elante Brown, another name to keep an eye on. We have a couple of committed prospects actually visiting this weekend. So if you're a VIP member, you've seen the three names, the three big names. No names to Maryland fans. So, you know, anytime that you're able to get committed guys on the last weekend leading up to the early signing period or signing day period, that's always an encouraging sign. So with 21 commits right now, expect a full class, and this weekend could be very interesting.
All right. So breaking down this a little bit, I assume all of the JUCO guys would be early entrants who would count against last year's class, correct?
So not all of them are.
Okay.
So Ami, Fennell, Mosiah are not. TJ, yeah. So, I mean, it is mixed. There's some of them are December grads. Their eligibilities are mixed too. But, yeah, there are a handful of early enrollees. So that'll actually count for last year's class. Also, I don't have the number in front of me, but Maryland has had a boatload of transfers out. So Maryland does have the scholarships available. I can actually do the math and get that scholarship number out for the board. But there's definitely a lot of spots left that Maryland and Loxley have to fill. They were kind of looking at the JUCO route to kind of fill those, especially on the offensive defensive side of the ball in the trenches.
Right. So as I understand it now, Maryland can oversign in this freshman class, correct, because they've got the scholarships available? Or does that still have to be worked out with early entry and stuff like that?
So it all counts towards, so you have your early enrollees, so it counts a little bit differently. I don't know the exact number, but yeah, Maryland can get over that that past that 25 limit. I believe it's up to 30 that they can take up to. But it's a little bit tricky. Maryland, I expect them to take a lot. I would say maybe if they can 5 to 6 more in the recruiting cycle, and then go transfer and grad transfer route.
Right, and all the JUCOs are considered recruits, not transfers.
Exactly, they are recruits.
Okay, so
who's the best guy, Ahmed, that they've gotten? Who's the highest ceiling of all those commits?
I've heard really good things out of Mosiah, actually. I know that he rotated in a little bit this year. I know he didn't get all the snaps, but that defensive line does have a lot of players on there. So they do a pretty good job of rotating guys in and out. But I've heard he's freakishly athletic and has a pretty high motor, and he plays pretty tough. It's all three kind of things that Maryland is kind of looking for. I've heard good things about him from his coaches, but he does not arrive until June. TJ Cauty and Johari Branch, they arrive in January. So, Branch is also a big frame, big body, and you could slide him into guard. I think that it's a guy that could potentially fight for a starting job, if not make his way into the 2-deep.
Herndon kid, sorry, Paul, that Herndon kid looks like he could be something too. I mean, he can fly. His video is pretty impressive. He just racked up tons of stats in high school. Obviously, running back is it's a big need now.
Well, it is now.
Yeah, it is now. It is now, excuse me, but just in terms of importance, generally speaking, they need linemen more desperately. Carry on.
Yeah. No, I thought that you meant which the JUCOs is most important.
Yeah, I meant all the kids that they've gotten.
Yeah. I honestly, Herndon looks really good. And I think that's just kind of a guy that Maryland kind of lucked into. Just kind of a situation with Ole Miss where they had a new coaching staff, wanted to reopen. And really with Maryland, it was pretty late. Coach Elijah Brooks, around the time that he decommitted from Ole Miss, the two sides showed interest. Picked up from there. There was a chance that he could have committed. Was I expecting it? No. But, he walked away from that visit. And after meeting Coach Loxley, he gave him his verbal commitment. So I think that's, again, especially with Leak and McFarland gone, that is definitely an important pickup.
Yeah, he could be their number two running back at this point next year. Who knows?
Yeah.
Well, running back is a position where somebody can literally just step in and play too. Like, it's not.
Exactly.
Like there are physical requirements and things that you need for like an offensive lineman or what have you. What do we feel about the level of play at Independence Community College? Like it's hard to know, for example, like where are these kids coming from? Are these kids who were good high school recruits who couldn't qualify, discipline problems, like, or just kids who just weren't good enough and wanted to go to JUCO ball to try and earn a scholarship that way? Like what's the majority of what we're looking at here?
The majority are guys that, had issues coming out of high school or, in one case, just wasn't recruited. So wanted to go the JUCO route, kind of develop a little bit more, get some more film. From
a little bit of both, really.
Yeah. Mosiah, he was actually at Washington. He was dismissed from the program, so he went to Independence. So he'll have 3 years to play three at Maryland.
And watching tape, just what do you feel about the level of competition that they're playing? Should fans expect any more out of these guys than your typical, you know, incoming freshman?
I mean, honestly, they fight. Like, they not fight as in like fist fight. I mean, like, they fight as in like they have.
You don't have to clarify, man.
Yeah, no, like honestly, that in itself is something that you really just don't see. They're guys that they all play with a chip on the shoulder. I know that the Indy, their schedule, I mean, they play some pretty good teams. So they're going up against the top JUCOs in the country. So I think that Independence struggled themselves this season, but they're going up against good teams for sure.
Okay.
It's just, I think where some of the concern is that Maryland fans, you know, they might see that, you know, oh, these guys weren't starting. But again, you know, they're bringing in the fifth teammate this weekend, and he's the guy that was really eating up everything. So a lot of these guys, you know, they really just need numbers. They need to increase that competition. They really don't have the luxury of switching a defensive lineman to offensive line because, hey, we need to improve the depth. So I think a lot of these guys are also big framed. I like Messiah. I think he has a pretty good burst. So, you know, we'll see. But, you know, you're also bringing in some experience in veteran leadership. So we'll see.
And you're bringing in some guys who want to play for Mike Locksley. I mean,
at the end of the day, you know, if you're getting guys that are buying in, you know, that goes a long way. So if you're able to establish that positive culture and guys that are kind of promoting the team culture and the philosophy and getting their other teammates to buy in, I mean, it sounds so cliche, but, you know, honestly, it is true. Like when the team is more united and they're playing for each other more, that definitely helps. And, you know, that definitely was not the case this year. It was pretty polarized. So, you know, they kind of need to fix that this year, next year. Well,
yeah, no, I mean, that's true. I mean, I don't know what's coming out of IMS headquarters in terms of the locker room. We've danced around that a little bit, but the story's been it was a pretty bad locker room culture this year, and there could be a million reasons for it. But if anything, I think the only thing that you can guarantee at this point is that by whatever the squad looks like next year, they're going to want to be guys who are fully bought into this program, because basically everybody else has been either invited to leave or taking their knapsack and heading down the road on their own accord.
Yeah, I mean that's definitely the case. So you know, they kind of do need to turn it around. So
so every year we do a new cover photo for the site's Facebook page. And so last year, we still had last year's up, which should have been switched by now because it's Bruno, who's obviously gone.
Well, you know that we're working hard on keeping the Facebook page updated as we've been muddling through producers and hosts and everything else for the past year.
Well, this is the 24/7
one. Oh, okay.
We've got like about 80,000 fans or whatever it is. And so I was asking the 24/7 art director to do one for me. And usually it's obvious. I'm like, do Mello Trimble and DJ Moore. Before that, like Stefan Diggs and Des Wells or whatever. So it's like, he's like, yeah, sure, I'll do one for you. I'm like, all right, let's go Anthony Cowan and
Crickets.
And I was like, who is this? Like, I was like, Dante Demas. Like, I don't want to depress people, but I couldn't think of the headliner guy to put on there. It would have been McFarlane or Leak, obviously, if they hadn't left. Am I forgetting anybody? Like, who would you have said to be the face of the football team for next year? I almost just went with Locksley because I couldn't come up with a star, you know, headliner.
I honestly don't know. I mean,
it's never been like that. That's not to say next year's doomed. It might be doomed, but I've never struggled to think of a headliner for the football team. I mean, Demas, he's probably the closest thing, I guess, to a star numbers wise.
Yeah, anyway, I mean, they're just no. It's an interesting thing to think about. I mean, Ahmed, where are you at? I mean, I mean, to me, like, there's not like an obvious pro on the team that you can just point out. You know, there's a couple good players, you know, like Marcus Minor, Terrence Davis,
Nick Cross,
you know, Shaq Smith.
Because he's the future guy.
I would say maybe Nick or I would say Demas though. I feel like most people know Demas just from this season and him being a local guy. But I don't know. It just doesn't. Yeah, you're right though. He doesn't.
It's really interesting.
It is pretty tough to find a perfect.
It just struck me because I was just like frozen trying to cut. I mean, it's never, even for Maryland, which has struggled, you know, its share in recent years, there's always been that one guy. There's plenty of guys who could be good. Chance Campbell, I think, could be good. And Ayinde Ely could be good. And some of these other guys, but there's definitely not a proven guy, a proven, even borderline all conference guy. I guess Nick Cross was like third team or something. But anyways, that was just.
Was he really?
He was something. Yeah, he was, I think. What was the honor? No, he's honorable mention, I think.
Honorable mention, all freshmen or something? Did he play enough?
I was surprised too because he only played what, 2/3 of the season.
Yeah,
and he had some decent moments. He had a really nice pick in maybe Penn State or one of the blowouts. Yeah, I was surprised. I have to look it up and see what it was.
Huh. Well, I mean, look. While we're on it, I mean, let's be real here. Like this, whatever you thought this was going to be when Loxie was hired. This is going to be a 2 to 3 to 4 year rebuild project now. Like there's there's no way this team's going to a bowl game next year. And there's no chance that they've got any real prospects for success, at least in the next 2 years, in my humble opinion. Am I wrong about this?
No.
Unlike basketball where you can just get a couple players. Here it is. Nick Cross, honorable mention. They have 3 honorable mention defensive players: Cross, Ely, and Keandre Jones.
Huh. Okay.
I mean, that's basically every team gets 3 guys.
You right.
Pick their best 3. You know.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just the more that you kind of look at it, it's like, you know, Maryland fans need to buckle up and I hope for Loxie's sake and you know that him and David Evans have had kind of a heart-to-heart about what this is going to take, because next year is going to be ugly.
Just to top it off, the schedule gets tougher.
Schedule's brutal, even more brutal than normal. And then, you know, it's going to be an Edsel first year or second year or significantly worse. I mean,
I'm curious as to how it's going to impact recruiting even more, because I think struggling – I mean, they only won 3 games, so it's going to be hard to struggle more next year. But like, if Maryland also wins 3 games again next year, that's going to set local recruiting back, in my opinion.
I mean, can local recruiting be set back any further at this point? I mean, we're not even here.
We can try and win 3 games in the next 3 years.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't like. It just feels like. The local recruiting is not a thing anymore.
No,
like it's just.
It's. I mean, they.
It's not.
Of course, they'll always try, but they're. It's. Yeah, I mean, honestly, it's why they're spending so much time in Florida.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like that there's a significantly better chance that Loxie could walk into a living room in Alabama or Georgia and pull some random kid out of a hat than he can walk into a kid's living room in Capitol Heights. It feels like it's a combination of you know, all the things we've talked about all this stuff, but it just feels like at this point the doors at the end are shut in the state of Maryland, and you know, that's just the way it is now.
Yeah.
And that's fucking weird.
And you know what? I'm not gonna like tease it, and you know, VIP members know and understand where I stand, but I'm just saying if Loxley is able to flip a guy like Rakeem Jarrett, that's going to be something that would kind of send waves. I mean, a guy like Rakeem is influential in this area. So if you flip him, that would definitely take notice of some other guys.
Do you feel like that, like, not asking about Rakeem specifically, but do you feel like that they're, you know, without being able to win, because they're not for a while, at least, you know, is, is Loxley just going to be able to pull a rabbit out of his hat here and be able to turn things around locally just without winning football games? Is it that simple?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think you can get by with it max 2 years. I think the second year you can point to, okay, we struggled, but this is why, this is our plan, and this is how you fit into this plan. That's how you're an integral part. So that I think you can get past. But no, I mean, at the end of the day, like I mean, head coaches are vocal about it now. Maryland needs to win. And that's just the everlasting circle, I guess, the chase, where, you know, you need the talent to win, but the coaches want you to win in order to get the talent. But no, I don't think that he'll be able to get that done.
Cool.
I just pulled up the top, and we already know this, but it's just striking when you look at it, the top 20 recruits in Maryland this year. And, well, Michigan's got 5 of the top 21, which is ridiculous, but it's all St. Francis.
St. Francis.
Funnel every kid except for Chris Braswell, who's number 2, is going to Bama. So you got Clemson, Bama, South Carolina, Penn State, LSU, Michigan, LSU, Oregon, Oklahoma, Tennessee, Penn State, West Virginia, Pitt, Michigan, Texas A&M. I mean, it just goes on and on until number 20. Finally, and number 20, Corey Dykes. There's your Maryland guy. He could be pretty good, but
I think he's a gem. Like, he's gonna play next year.
Yeah,
he's good.
But like the Chris Jenkins legacy, obviously his dad of the same name started Maryland. He goes to Michigan. That's when we thought they'd get. So I mean, I feel like we're kind of piling on at this point, but it's going to be a tough. He's got a serious challenge ahead of him. I don't know what you do if you're Mike Loxley like right now. I mean, do you think he gets better in 21 locally? Like, are we going to be saying this again, Nick? Now that he's, you know, these are the kids as we've kind of given him somewhat of a pass because these were the kids who were kicking off their recruitments during Maryland's whole scandal last year. So that makes it tough with them. Nobody was really recruiting him. A year from now with the 20, I mean, it's hard to ask because we don't know how.
It's hard because recruiting just takes time. And, you know, at the end of the day, you never know. I mean, if Maryland, if they do improve and they kind of stay on a guy, even if they're getting 5s and like hovering around bowl eligibility, I think that could kind of help. You just can't have seasons and blowouts like this. But I mean, there's always potential. There's so many recruiting ties to this area. So, I do think we're kind of underselling the impact of last year. I think that was something that is just, it's just going to have to take time to get past.
It's just amazing that we're sitting here, you know, where Mike Loxley is the head coach and we're just getting pounded locally like this. I mean, and with the conference, you're never going to win 6 games without some dudes. It's a chicken or the egg type thing. Like, I don't know how Maryland ever gets to the point where it's good enough to convince these kids to come to help make them good enough. Like, I mean, it's just.
Yeah, probably like an egg scenario.
And it's killing me.
It's tough. But.
All right, cool. So in the meantime, we'll have to pluck random kids from SEC country because, you know, no big deal.
Dude's looking for a place to stay in a hot meal.
Start recruiting the California Penal League. All right. Okay. Two more things for you, Ahmed. Let's talk about the visitors this weekend. Who do we got coming? Do we got any potential commitment watch?
There's one guy that is coming for an official. It depends on when he announces. There's another that could commit that, but his official is 50-50 right now, just due to some, it's more so NCAA, getting back eligibility, clearinghouse, all that jazz. It's just like processing paperwork. So that could be something that holds up one official visitor. So right now I definitely have one for Maryland. I think Maryland, there's a couple others where they sit good with, Hodgson, Jacory, and Bennett. Maryland's been on him for a while. DeAndre Butler, they're bringing him in as well. We posted that. I'm keeping my eye on them. But DeAndre is not signing during the early signing period, so that's going to be a long game. So we'll see. I mean, they're hosting a couple local guys that are committed, so that I think those are going to be the ones to keep an eye on.
Okay. Where does this class rank nationally on signing day, early signing day?
See, because for it to go to like 35th right now, they would have to get a big time commit. I personally, just going into this weekend, don't see it. So I'll go with 40 going into the early signing period.
Currently sitting at 41.
Yeah, I think they'll stick at 40. And this is also accounting for other teams moving up and whatnot. So there's plenty of guys that are uncommitted, top guys that they're going to commit as well. So I think it's going to move around drastically. But yeah, I'll maybe not at 40, but around it. And then we'll see. There's going to be plenty of guys that elect not to sign early and wait till February. So I think from there, Maryland will be able to say, okay, better evaluate where their class currently stands, who's out there, evaluate the board, and then go from there. So honestly, it's just too early to say where it ends up in February. But I see it. I don't see it changing too much between now and next week.
All right. Last but important information. How do we feel about the current commitments? There are 21 of them. About how many do we expect to sign on early signing day, which is next Wednesday, December 18th?
I am expecting all but one, and the one, our VIP members, have the story, know why, and what the current situation is. So, there you go.
Give me the name.
It's on the site.
Give me the name. You held off all this stuff for the stuff for the site. Come on, Dad's not listening.
What do you want me to do?
That's fine. It's fine.
They're not going to buy the cow if you give the milk away for free. Come on now,
dude. You can't hold it.
The man said no.
I've been dropping scoop all week. If they don't like that I'm not giving up that one, they can go like the other 100 that I put up.
And Jeff bought that yacht after week two in the football season, and now he's got a penny pinch a little bit here.
Not dude, that basketball game didn't do me any favors either.
That's for sure. Anyway, still getting 20 out of 21, not bad, especially given the way that things look. What we're going to do next week is we will have a podcast, even if it's just me and Ahmed, next Wednesday night to go over signing day, and hopefully there won't be any news. So it'll be super short, and we'll talk about all the kids signing and no craziness and maybe a couple extra gems along the way.
See what this weekend brings. Stay locked in.
Stay locked in and get your subscription now, because Jeff's not telling you shit unless you pay for it.
We give out quite a bit, I would say. I bet you.
That's true.
I bet half of the content is free.
I'm just messing with you. Don't get all.
I'm not defensive. I'm just saying the model has changed. We used to be 100% VIP paywall.
Yeah.
Back, it's completely changed now. But anyways, that was a good answer.
You got any discounts going on at the moment?
They are constantly doing this promo, that promo. It's way over my pay grade. I think there might be a 50% off deal for new members. We had a crazy one that was like 75% off on Black Friday. So I should know. I think the 50 off might still be going, but you have to check on the site.
Yeah, usually Christmas time they do that type of thing. So if you're into this and you want to get the goods, Ahmed is bringing it right now. So it's time. All right. With all of that and the sales pitches, thanks for listening. We'll have hopefully some good news for you next Wednesday on Football Recruiting Front. No basketball to bring us down. We are on Facebook. We are on Twitter. We are all over the InsideMarylandSports.com message boards. We are IMS Radio, and we are out.